Call to order and welcome. We would like to welcome you to the May 28th, 2025 meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission. The purpose of the commission is to provide for the protection, enhancement, perpetuation, and use of areas having a special historical, cultural, or aesthetic interest or value in order to promote the health, prosperity, and general welfare of the people. The preservation of this heritage is of a basic and vital importance for the development and maintenance of the community's tourism, its culture, and for the protection of property values because of their association with history. This commission is appointed by the City Council and is not affiliated with any for-profit or nonprofit organizations. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance are used by the Commission to determine the compatibility of proposed changes and new development. Visible from the public right-of-way, including streets, lanes, and sidewalks within the city, local historic, and conservation districts. The Commission cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as land use, landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, impact on property values, and interior arrangements of structures are not within the Commission's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a certificate of appropriateness. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis for decisions. Please turn off all cell phones. Signposting. Members of the Commission receive an electronic agenda the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the project. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled, or any projects not properly posted. Okay, hearing none, we will go on to the next item, the consent agenda. The agenda items have been found by the Preservation Office to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. Is there any member of the public or a commissioner who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda?
I would like to remove two. Okay. Do is this one of these or no? Okay.
So just number two?
No, I'm sorry. Number 15 and number sorry. 15. 1 second.
Is it 18, Scott?
15 is a petition of Sawyer Design, Jonathan Leonard, 25-00217 COA, 421 West 31st Street.
Okay. And what's the other one?
The other one is 18, petition of Ethos Ellen Harris, 25-00-2207 COA, 534 East 32nd Street.
Okay, so those two items will be removed off the consent agenda and go to the regular agenda. Is there a motion to approve the revised consent agenda?
Katrina Horning, I make a motion to approve the revised agenda.
Kathy Levine, a second.
Let's do this as a vote. Patricia?
Brian Woods, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Jeff Nutrick, approve. The motion carries. All right. We need to do the adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to adopt the May 28th agenda of the MPC?
Katrina Horning, I make a motion to adopt the regular agenda with the revised additions.
Pat Richardson, second. Pat Richardson, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Meetings are
Excuse me, Chair, your microphone.
I'm sorry. Minutes from the previous meetings are attached to the agenda. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes for the previous meetings? Okay, if not, we will call for a motion.
Kathy Levina, I move to approve the April 23rd, 2025 Historic Preservation Commission meeting minutes as presented.
Katrina Horning, I second.
Okay, let's start with a vote. Pamela?
Pam Miller, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Kathy Levina, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Jeff Matryka, approve. Motion carries. Items requested to be removed from the final agenda. If there are any items listed to be approved for removal, there are none. Let's go to the continued agenda. These are items that have been continued deferred to the next meeting as of date certain or that staff has determined incomplete this at this time. Ask for a motion to approve the continued agenda.
Katrina Horning, I move we approve the continued agenda.
Pam Miller, I second.
Let's call for a vote. Let's start with Pat.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Jeff Nefrika, approve. Motion carries. Requests for extensions, there are currently none. Now it's on to the regular agenda. Applications that are submitted monthly appear on the regular agenda in the following order by districts. Victorian District, Kyler Brownsville District, Streetcar District, Conservation Districts. Let's begin the regular agenda. Staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendation. The commission asks that the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance and questions raised by the commission. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to public comments. The commission will then go into commission discussion, at which time there will be no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairman. We will structure commission discussion by calling on each board member for two rounds of 2 minutes, comments or less. Board members are not required to comment. If you are joining us virtually for the first time, locate your control panel. Public that wishes to submit comments, use the raise your hand feature. I will be notified and I will call you by your name. You will submit your name for the record and then you make comment. Please keep your comments to three minutes or less. The chair calls the application by number, name, and address. All right. So, let's go ahead and, I guess, do we start, with number 15?
Yeah, we can put him at the end. Those are both Jonathan's and he stepped out right now.
All right. So let's put 15 and 18 then, I guess, at the end. And, let's start with item number 25, the petition of Barnard Architects, Bob Portman, 25-002066, COA for 220 West Bolton Street.
Afternoon, this is Kelly Mitchell. So the applicant is requesting approval to construct a rear addition and to make alterations to an existing rear porch at 220 West Bolton Street. That's not helpful. Second. Okay, this looks a little bit better. So based on a site visit, only a portion of the proposed project will be visible from the public right-of-way, chiefly the lane. Portions that will be visible will include this rear addition that will be constructed, as well as portions of the enclosed rear porch. That rear porch is existing. Anything that's on the lower level and sections of the enclosure will not be reviewed again because it's not visible from the public right-of-way. So with regards to the rear addition, this will see removal of an existing rear addition that staff cannot date, but that it's not historic and that is not a character-defining feature. The new proposed rear addition will have a relatively small footprint and will be supported in height and mass of the primary building. The addition will require the removal of a door and two corbels. Majority of the time, staff would not recommend such removal, but in this case, since it is on the rear of the building, staff found that it was compatible and met the standards. Again, majority of the time, additions should be on the rear, not on the front. The proposed design and materials for the addition are visually compatible and meet the standards. With regards to the rear porch, again, this is an existing element that is not historic and does not add to the historic character of the building. Work on the porch includes changing the roof form and will see the installation of windows and a new exterior wall as part of the enclosure. The materials are proposed as well as design elements such as the shed roof meet the standards and are visually compatible. The porch, as a side note, will be retaining the current footprint as well, so there's no issues with lot coverage or setbacks, anything like that. So with that, staff recommends approval of the rear addition and the alterations to an existing rear porch at 220 West Fulton Street as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. Applicant is here if you'd like to hear him speak, but does board have any questions for me first?
Any questions?
Scott Krotzer, will the historic details be kept in order to restore if at which point the addition is removed?
You can ask the applicant that.
Okay, let's hear from the applicant.
Good afternoon, Bob Portman, Barn Architects. To answer your question, Mr. Krotzer, yes, the window will be kept on premises. The two shutters will be kept on premises. The work to the brick on the lintel, we'll keep that. Mr. Dalton has sufficient storage in his garage, and it's, in our opinion, it's replaceable if that addition is removed. Any other questions? I'm right here.
Any questions? Okay, hearing none. I only have one speaker card from Ellie Isaacs.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. HSF's ARC does not agree that the proposed addition on the second floor is visually compatible. We do feel the other additions are visually compatible, for the record. We feel that the project could be completed more sensitively in order to retain as well as retain visibility and even potentially refabricate the brackets. The extended second floor addition should match the existing addition's roofline in order to keep them visible. The window typologies on the second floor addition are also not visually compatible in our opinion.
Thank you. Would the petitioner like to speak again to address that?
The existing addition as it is right now is, by all our accounts, we don't believe was ever approved. It's probably back done in the 90s. So what we're doing is improving this rear addition. It is visible from the lane, but we think it's better for the back of the building and take exception to Historic Savannah's comments.
Okay, thank you. Commissioners, any questions you have of the petitioner or staff? Okay, hearing no questions, we're going to go ahead and move into board discussion. Each member is going to get 2 minutes. We'll start with Patricia.
Pat Richardson, I agree with staff recommendations.
Brian Woods, I agree with staff recommendations.
Katrina Horning, no comment.
Kathy Levine, I've got concerns with the addition being subordinate. The rear cornice is a historic detail. Not only does this cornice extend the width of this property, but it also extends the width of the row. The historic historic detail should not be altered for the new addition. I think the height should be reduced so that the detail is retained. That's what I'm going to say right now.
Scott Krotzer, I agree about the loss of the historic detail on the rear since it is such a contributing factor to the characteristics of the home. So I just wonder if it could be redesigned to be more visually compatible and keep the rhythm of the windows somehow. I understand the need for the addition.
This is Pam Miller. I agree with my colleagues that I'm
wondering if there isn't some way to retain some of that architectural detail and still meet the design desires of the client. Thank you.
Okay, let's go through a second round. Pat, do you have any other comments?
No comment.
Brian?
Brian Woods, no comment.
Katrina?
Katrina Horn, no comment.
Kathy?
Kathy Lippon, I'm going to stick with the lowering of the third floor addition to maintain the historic cornice around the entire row of the building. And if the petitioner would be amendable, I think maybe a 1-over-1 window would be a little bit more appropriate than the 2-over-2, just to simplify it a bit on that second floor.
Scott.
Scott Krotzer, no further comment.
Ann Miller, no further comment.
Okay. Is there any further board discussion? Can I call for a motion?
Kathy Lidbina, I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of 220 West Bolton Street, 25-002066-COA, with the following conditions. That the third floor addition height be reduced so that the historic cornice and brackets remain in place. Otherwise, the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
Scott Krotzer, I second.
Okay, having a motion properly tendered and seconded, let's go to a vote. Let's start with Pat.
Pat Richardson, approved.
Brian was approved.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Jeff Notarico approves, so the motion carries. Let's go on to the petition of Array Design, Shauna Cusera, 20-002209 COA, 116 West Duffy Street, new construction, small parts 1 and 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the commission. This is Caitlin Chamberlain. The applicant is requesting approval to construct an accessory structure in the rear yard and the installation of a metal shed roof over the rear deck along the principal structure located at 116 West Duffy Street. The application also includes a swimming pool installation, which will also be reviewed. The accessory structure will be a one-story, two-car garage with a roof deck and an exterior stair on the west side of the garage. So just to kind of go over the site plans, here's first level plan, site plan. Side by side, we have here the existing and the proposed. And then I wanted to show you the elevations real quick. Okay. It'll catch up eventually. There we go. All right. And just for some context, and this is, I think last month it was that you saw a request for the center of these three townhomes. So this one is to the right. So 116 West Duffy Street, it was built in 1889. It's a contributing resource and is the end unit of the three row houses. The majority of the houses on this block of West Duffy Street are contributing, mainly built within the same time period. The property backs up to West Park Lane where the accessory structure would be constructed. The Sanborn maps from 1898 through 1966 show how there were several outbuildings along both sides of West Park Lane. On the 1953 Sanborn map, there was a garage on this lane side as well as the 1955-66 map, just for some historical background. So with regard to the Secretary of the Interior standards, there is a proposed shed roof to be installed on the above deck, above the deck on the rear elevation of the historic house. So there is a side profile, but staff is requesting a front facing profile so we can see how the full thing is going to look and how it will be installed to ensure those standards are met. Not related to what was applied for, but still noticed by staff was while we were doing our site visits, we noticed that the double doors and transom on the rear elevation have been replaced. It appears the original door configuration was the transom and double doors, as it's identical to the other two row houses. The removal of the original door configuration does not meet the standards as noted above. Distinctive features shall be preserved. A COA for the door could not be located, but a photo within the submittal packet shows the removal work was in progress. Staff requests further information and that an after-the-fact COA is applied for because this was clearly against the standards. But with regard to the swimming pool and the garage structure, they will both be situated away from the historic house and will not destroy the building's historic character or distinctive features, being separate. And then for the standards 9 and 10, new additions to not damage and new additions reversible back to the shed roof over the deck. This was likely something that could be removed in the future, but staff is, again, just that's why we're requesting more information to ensure this could definitely be removed in the future if the need ever were to arise. Visual compatibility, height, width, and scale of the garage are appropriate to the scale of the row house, and it fits within the lot without requesting variances. Let's go back to... And then the height, width, and scale of the shed roof of the historic house appears to be proportional to the house based on the west elevation drawing. And again, that new elevation drawing will help within that, the analysis of that. Projections. Out of the three row houses, there is not a roof covering a deck on the rear elevation, but that does not prevent the possibility of installing one. The design appears to be visually compatible as it does not overtake the building. It will also be partially obstructed by the fence once it's installed. For roof shapes, the flat roof shape is seen on accessory structures on lanes throughout this area. Just a few words on the design standards. Going back to the door situation, while the condition of the double doors, transom, and molding at the time of their removal is not known, the standard is not met for the replacement door. The doors may have been replaced over the years, but it is likely that the transom itself remained intact. So the new door is not in the same configuration. Staff requests information about whether the original transom and molding were salvaged, and if so, should be reinstalled. If not, the replacement door, transom, and molding should match the material and configuration of what was removed. And just going back here. So just for the staff recommendation, it is approving the request to construct a one-story garage with a roof deck and a swimming pool in the rear yard of the property at 116 West Duffy Street with the following conditions to be submitted to staff prior to starting the work because it is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One, submit a full elevation drawing of the rear porch roof railing and deck expansion, including how the roof will be attached to the historic house and a perspective of how this will look from behind the fence to see what's visible from the lane, which the commission may request to see at the June 25th, 2025 HPC meeting. Two, apply for an after-the-fact COA for the removal of the double doors, transom, and molding. Include information about whether the original transom, molding, and doors were salvaged for reinstallation or whether it will be an in-kind replacement. And three, provide information about the height and railing and spacing between the cables for the stair railing leading up to the deck on the garage and for the rear deck area if it will be visible from beyond the wood fence. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions of board members?
Scott Krotzer, I have a question. When you were looking at the door on the back, does the window not also appear to be updated, or is it just masked the blower window on the right.
And I think they were painted, but not changed, because at first we thought that, but it looks like they were just painted.
Okay. And secondly, just to be consistent with the roof deck on the lane side, does that give a bird's eye view into other people's property? And have we considered flipping it to be their responsibility on the inside of the lot?
I mean, that's typically not something we would evaluate for this, for any kind of use or anything like that.
Pam Miller, Caitlin, I have a question. This is one of the things I brought up last month when we looked at that center the construction request for the ADU behind there. Mm-hmm. How is this going to, even though there's not another ADU there, and the I think it's what, 114? What was the address? 114?
Yeah, it was 114.
That center building. Mm-hmm. So how is that going to work with this now as far as, you know, not only the visual compatibility, but also being able to, like Scott said, just look right into their windows now.
Yeah, so that part we wouldn't be, you know, we don't get into what people can and can't see from what vantage point, but the setbacks for ADUs is 3 feet. The side setback recommendations is 3 feet in the ordinance for accessory structures. So meeting those setbacks should allow the spacing, and that was what I think the difference between last month's one was, that they wanted to be at the zero lot line. And this just goes to show, like, what was discussed then, that, well, the person next door may want to construct something. How are they supposed to have spacing between those?
Yeah.
So I believe that, I don't know for sure because it's not being heard at the ZBA. I believe they might be revisiting that project to meet. And then if you've got three feet and 3 feet on either side, then you've got that space that should be there.
But that's why, you know, I think last month we were concerned about that zero lot line and all of those variance requests that, you know, what would this mean when the guy next door wanted to build something? And lo and behold, a month later, we've got somebody wanting to build something. And so I can't get the perspective from the lane view even, because we don't even have, you know, a side by side drawing of what's proposed, and then for both, you know what I mean? So it's very difficult for me to visualize really what that's going to look like. And I already have some issues with some of the other stuff with the after the fact and the doors and things like that. So I'm just wondering if this is something we should.
And while I understand it's not under this commission's purview to address sight lines, I just kind of interpret that as the health of the neighborhood situation. And the reason that I bring it up.
Understood.
Any other comments from commissioners? Okay, let's hear from the petitioner, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Shauna Casera. I'm the architect working on this project. And I also am aware of what was requested at the neighboring property. I was relieved to see that you did not recommend approval of that zero setback for exactly the reasons that we're talking about here. So I have maintained that 3-foot side yard setback on both sides and managed to get a 2-car garage. So we have 2 off-street parking spaces. Now, I've told my clients you can't open your doors at the same time in there, but we have 2 off-street parking spaces, and to address your concern with height and how this fits into the neighborhood, we are talking about a fairly low above the ground roof deck with a 42-inch high parapet wall, so it will feel kind of enclosed up there, and then only a portion of that roof deck having a metal pergola structure over it. So as far as how imposing it feels, it's really a 1-story structure with a parapet wall and a metal covering. Just to give you a little feeling about what the scale is. I know that the one at the center, 114 that you were looking at before, that was a 2-story with a gable roof, and I believe they were designing it so that it would have no windows on the side facing this property. So, you know, we're kind of up against the potential of a great big solid two-story wall. But we are trying to at least remain in what I think is an appropriate scale for a garage. Regarding the staff recommendations, I am happy to provide Caitlin with an elevation showing how that shed roof goes across the back of the house. I have 3 8x8 wood columns that will go across the back, standard cable rail at 36 inches, and I'm happy to, you know, further explain that. As far as the after-the-fact COA for the door that was removed from a contributing structure, that is something that I inherited. So we just need to figure out how to go through the process and work with historic preservation and determine what our options are. So I'm willing to do what I need to do for that, but I was not a part of that renovation when they removed that door. One last thing I want to mention is that in the staff report, it's requesting a wood fence, and we are actually asking, or it's mentioning a wood fence. We are actually proposing an aluminum fence. And Caitlin, I don't want to mess you up here, but let me see if I can scroll to this materials page because I do have a photo of it. Or do I? Is it teeny tiny? Well, anyways, and I'm happy to submit the specifications on that, but it's a horizontal aluminum fence that we're proposing. And I'm here to answer any questions.
Okay. Commission members, are there any questions for the petitioner?
Pam Miller, I have some questions about the fence. I guess I didn't realize that. So do we have examples of other metal or fences in that area? Caitlin, is that something we do there? I'm just used to having everybody put wood fences up, so that's my question.
Yeah, that I wasn't looking for fences at the time of writing the report, so I guess we can't tell a whole lot from here. But I believe aluminum is an approved material.
Extruded aluminum is approved material.
Kathy? Yeah. What you're saying? Sure. Okay. The product is called Sleek Fence, and this is an extruded aluminum. I am looking for an image. So here's a 69 inch high, which is what I'm proposing, and it's 4 inch tall slats. The whole thing is all powder coated extruded aluminum.
Scott Krotzer, I have one question for the petitioner. I appreciate the setback, that you've already incorporated into the design. Will you, and I apologize, I didn't look closely because I was more interested in the setback, but reminded that there could potentially be one on zero lot line. We hope not, but if there is, will these ADUs have fire suppression built into that exterior wall that may be so closely bordered?
It won't be fire suppression, but it will have a rating.
Okay.
Because it's already within the 10-foot required for fire code setbacks, so that wall will have to be a one-hour rated wall. Yes. And this is not an ADU. This is an accessory structure, so this is just a garage with a roof deck above it.
Mm-hmm. Commissioners, any other questions?
One more regarding the rear door and the transom. So that's not something – that, so you inherited the project, but not the material that was removed. Would you consider, with the scope of what the work you're doing, returning that to the original door and not the original, but
original
style
configuration
and, yeah, exactly.
And in kind, yeah. as Caitlin mentioned, I'm definitely going to take that into consideration. It could be that my client has saved that original door, but I'm not sure what the best approach is going to be thus far. I just want to play by the rules and see what we can do to remedy it.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioners, any other comments?
Pat Richardson, is it possible to recreate the door?
Yeah, it could always be rebuilt in wood and painted. And we do have the two adjacent row houses that Jonathan and Caitlin feel have that original historic door and transom configuration. So we kind of have some proof there that we could use to inform our design.
I would like to see it replaced.
Any other comments?
I'm going to have one more. Sorry. Don't mean to take up everybody's time. But considering the things that we want to see come back, you know, we need elevations. We need the drawings. We need the possibility of replacing the rear door, those kinds of things. Would it make any sense to bring this back a month from now to see all those things? Is that something that I don't know how the rest of the group feels to maybe –
Can I respond to that? I'd really like to do the after the fact COA for the door as its own thing and ask for your approval for the swimming pool and the garage structure that have been proposed here.
So you'd like us to remove the number two agenda, the after the fact COA, remove that for now, but you still got to come back with the elevation drawings and things like that. Is that something?
Exactly.
That staff? Can you address that?
Yeah, in fact, this was written just because, you know, the door situation was not, and, you know, we had talked about it after we realized what happened, that, you know, it wasn't part of this project. So rather than hold up, because it does need to be its own after the fact application, that's going to have to come in on its own thing. But to not hold up the other parts of the project, that's why we have recommended approving the garage and the pool. And then the elevation drawing, if you wanted to see that, or, you know, that could come back, but we just thought instead of having it all be continued. Because they would still need to apply for it. We could add the fence too, yeah.
I, for one, would like to see the two accessory dwelling units and the garage side by side to see how they visually relate to each other, the two proposed ones. But, I mean when are they, when is the one next door going to the?
I have not heard. They removed it from the last ZBA agenda. They requested to remove it, and they, instead of being on here, they requested to be continued. So because it's two different architects, you know, I don't know how we could get a side by side necessarily, but maybe some, at least like a form of something. But, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with that. You know, this board wasn't going to recommend approval for the zero lot line. Not sure where the ZBA was going to go with it, but it sounds like they might be reconsidering. Going for that, and maybe they'll try to redesign within the setbacks.
And I appreciate that this didn't request a variance.
Sure.
So thank you very much for that. So yeah, there, maybe with some adjustments, we could move forward with part of it.
Okay. Any other comments from the board? At this time, we have one speaker, Ellie Isaacs.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. HSF's ARC would like to advocate for the continuance on this item. The design, they feel the design is not compatible with the house's main the main house's architectural style. The extension of the, one of their big concerns was the extension of the fence, which later becomes mechanical screening. Trying to get to the drawing. It's taking a minute here. They feel it's not appropriate for it to be as tall as it is. Lastly, no drawings other than the one side elevation here, was provided to show how the rear, the new rear deck will appear, on the rear of the main house, which you all have also expressed. Thank you.
Would the petitioner like to, speak again?
Ellie, I'll just address that. The, screening that you're looking at is just under the landing of the stair. So from the lane, were you talking about this metal screening? Okay.
They didn't understand why it was as tall as it is, why it can't be just a normal fence height.
Okay. Yeah, I just had it going all the way up to the underside of the landing. So just to clarify that. Thank you.
Okay. At this point, I guess we will close it to public comments and go into board discussion. Let's go ahead and start with Pat.
Pat Richardson, I really would like to see the door redesigned and put back in place, the historical aspects of it.
Brian.
Brian Woods, I'd also like to see the door redesigned and I think a continuation so we can see the how the drawings look. Right? Is that what I'm saying? Yes.
Katrina.
Katrina Hornung, I want to echo that I think that the configuration of the door and transom should match the existing two existing row houses, and that's it.
Kathy.
Kathy Levina, I agree with the door replacement, the historic door configuration being replaced. Historic Savannah Foundation, I would like to see that panel lowered to be in keeping with the height of the fence, and the landing, the second floor or first floor landing leading to the deck, I would like to see that pushed back from the facade so it doesn't read in the same plane as the facade, but pushed back at least a couple of feet so that it doesn't become a feature.
Scott?
I agree that maybe there's a little bit too much and it needs to be continued.
Pam?
This is Pam Miller. I'm really grappling with between continuing and just seeing if staff is comfortable with a lot of these things, but like my colleagues to ask for a have that door replaced in the transom.
Okay. Let's do one more time. Pat, anything to add?
Pat Richardson, I go with my earlier comments.
Brian?
I agree with the recommendations of the board.
Katrina?
Katrina Horner, no comment.
Kathy?
I think a continuance for the garage, and maybe we could approve the door reconfiguration. Replacement, excuse me.
Scott.
Scott Crosser. I'm assuming that the door configuration has to come in separately. So I just say removing the door configuration, if that's somehow still tied, unless I misunderstood what they said and it's going to be coming in separate.
Because it's an after the fact, it has to come in on an application. Plus, yeah, we still need all the information.
That's how I understood.
If it's not known yet, if the materials were salvaged or if it needs to be reproduced. So
I just think that the question of these three row houses is bigger and I would like to see a continuance.
Pam.
Pam Miller, no further comment.
Okay. At this point, I would like, Kathy.
With a continuance, I would like to see the outline at least of the neighboring ADU.
Okay. At this point, I'd like to call for a motion.
This is Pam Miller. Hang on just a minute. Let me get all my numbers up. I'd like to make a motion to continue to June 25th, 2025. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission continue the petition of Array Design, Shauna Cusera, 25002209 COA, 116 West Duffy Street, until, like I said, June 25th, 2025, for continuance to address the issues as of the fence, the elevation, the removal of, and plan for the replacement and reinstallation of the double doors and transom, or the door and transom, and information about the height and the railing of the stair railing.
Scott Krotzer, I second.
Okay, having a motion properly tendered and seconded, let's call for a vote. Let's start with Pam.
Pam Miller, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Motion carries. We will continue this on to the next agenda item. Next item we've got is the petition of Jerome Elder, Elder Studios, 25-002210 COA, 615 West 40th Lane, new construction, small parts 1 and 2.
Thank you. This is Caitlin again. The applicant's requesting approval for the construction of a one-story accessory dwelling unit at the rear of the property at 615 West 40th Lane. 615 West 40th Street and 616 West 40th Lane are two contributing resources and were two principal buildings on a single lot. With the current zoning standards, that this use is no longer permitted. The structure at 616 West 40th Lane was severely damaged by fire, and its demolition was approved on a previous COA. Currently, there can only be one principal building on the lot, thus the request for an ADU. Both buildings will now share the 615 street number due to this. These are just some photos showing what had been there previously, and the house is getting, the main house is being rehabbed, not as part of this project, but also showing, you know, here's what was here. This is what has happened since. And just that there is a degree of visibility here because of the empty lot, but even still, you know, you can see much of this building from, you know, a lot of times on the lanes you don't see as much, but from the street view, it's a little more than usual. So just for Secretary of the Interior standards, since the principal structure on the lot is contributing, it will not be impacted by the construction of the ADU at the rear of the property. For height, width, and scale, the standards are met. The building is smaller than what was there previously since it's an accessory building, rather than another principal building as the former was. There are very few contributing resources along West 40th Lane, but this proposed ADU is in scale with the surrounding resources within the viewshed of the building, and the majority of which are one-story frame structures. So just to get into the design standards a little bit, the intent of the standards is to ensure appropriate new construction additions and alterations within the Cuyler-Brownsville Historic District. They are not intended to promote copies of the architectural designs of the past, but to encourage contemporary designs that protect and complement existing contributing resources. The proposed ADU is contemporary design of its time, but still respectful to the form of the historic contributing primary dwelling. So just to kind of go through the site plan. Existing conditions. And this is in relation to the house. So with, staff found many of the standards were met. One that was questionable was for the front and rear elevations for the 30% ground floor facade, this appears to be met, but for the east and west elevations, the standard is not met. This requirement, though, conflicts with a building code requirement that states that any building that is less than 10 feet from the property line shall have a maximum of 25% openings. The building code supersedes the historic ordinance requirement because it's more restrictive based on zoning ordinance section 1.1.8A. So thus, in this case, the special exception would not be required to follow the building code standards, which was confirmed by the city planning manager. Due to this fact, staff recommends the applicant considers designs that could add more windows, not to exceed the 25% maximum. And there have been ongoing discussions with the applicant, and they seem amenable to that. And we'll tell you a little more about that during their presentation time. So with regard to the accessory structure or accessory dwelling unit standards, most were met. For architectural style, such use shall be designed in a similar architectural style. The ADU is designed as a front gable, one-story frame structure. Though a more contemporary type of building, the overall style is similar. As noted above, the ordinance does not require copies of the historic buildings, but contemporary designs that are respectful to the surrounding historic structures. So with that, staff recommends approve the request to construct an accessory dwelling unit at the rear of the property at 615 West 40th Lane, with the following condition to be submitted to and approved by staff prior to starting the project, because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards, which is consider options to add more windows to the elevations visible from West 40th Street, not to exceed the maximum of 25% as per the building code. Thank you. I'll be happy to take your questions.
Commissioners, any questions?
Brian Woods, question. I know this is probably not something that we really have anything to do with, but is there an ordinance about how close a structure can be to like a light pole? It seems very close to the house. I'm just thinking, and it's not straight looking, like if it falls over in a storm or somebody hits it with a car, is it going to damage that home, the people inside? Would they be in danger?
Yeah, so that's not in the purview of the Historic Commission, but there's a series of permits and approvals that need to happen, not just the COA. So if there is something with another department, that could come up, but that's just not something we review.
Any other questions? Okay, can we hear from the petitioner, please?
Good afternoon, everyone. Sorry about that. Jerome Elder with JL The Studio. Firstly, I would like to thank the staff for working back and forth with us on this one. Unfortunately, as you saw, the structure did get extremely badly damaged by fire. And here we are now trying to ensure that we put something back that we think is fitting for its time as well as its location. To answer your question on that, our building is actually slightly smaller, so it is a little further away, and yes, we'd be working through all of that with the city, but we should be fine. As for this, one of the things that you'd see, it's actually added on here. What we have opted to do is add an additional window, and this is the kitchen area back here, and reduce the size of the casement windows here, just so that we could still work with that. And I can show you it in this document. Sorry. Guess I need to show it here. So here we go. So we've added additional windows so that it's not as stark of elevation on either side. And as mentioned, we are very close to the property line, so we do have the limitation of the 25 square feet. I believe what we also attempted to do is, in working with the ownership and their interest and design intent, was to go with a contemporary sleek silhouette of just one form. And that's why you'd see that we have that extruded roof line that's on either side, which then becomes the porch covering. And outside of that, just to show, The siding that we are calling for actually would look like this vertically. It's nice and clean, and ideally the paneling on the front, it will be the same color, but it will also be a tight joint with hidden fasteners. So the design intent is there, and we're excited to see this project actually happen, and hopefully no more fires in the future. So any questions?
Scott Krautzer, I just have one question, and I know flooding isn't usually under the purview, but you're building this on grade. Are you correct. Concerned?
No, there are a few other buildings that are on grade within that neighborhood. So on the lane, just west of it, there's one that's on grade. I would say it's maybe 6 inches above grade. So there's just a that's like a single step, which is something that we may encounter, but for the most part, we do not. And if we do see any other issues, we'd more than likely come back with something with stairs.
All right. I was just wondering in like the realm of public safety, because if you have any water coming in, you're going to be inundated.
Correct.
At this level. So, okay. Thank you.
Any other comments from commissioners? Okay, I have one public comment card from Ellie Isaacs.
I'm going to apologize in advance because you're going to hear me a lot today. Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. HSF's ARC does not agree that the proposed new construction is visually compatible with the surrounding area in terms of materiality and form, in terms of its recessed porch areas on each end. Although we do appreciate the scale and the modernity, the design appears utilitarian and flat, focusing on its verticality and its materials, which is also not common for the area.
Thank you. Would the petitioner like to speak again?
Do I have to state my name again?
Yes. Yes, you do.
Jerome Elder, J. Elder Studio. We do appreciate the comments, and we understand the difference in opinion. For us, we do believe, and for the owners as well, that this is a good contemporary take on this. The simplicity, we think, also helps with not overpowering the historic buildings in and around the context. And we do believe once it comes to fruition that it will be appreciated even more because it's sleek and simple. So that's all.
Any questions from commissioners? Okay, at this time, public comment is closed, and we will go into board discussions. I'd like to start with Pat.
Pat Richardson. I actually disagree with the petitioner. I think this is a little too contemporary for that area. And I really don't see any historical elements in your design at all.
Brian?
No comment.
Katrina?
Katrina Hornung. Pat, I disagree with you. I think it's a creative and elegant design that is sensitive to the context of the neighborhood while being a little bit bold. I will give it that.
Kathy.
Kathy Levina, I appreciate the mass and scale being in line with the rest of the buildings in the area. And I think the modernity is an interesting take.
Scott.
Scott Krautzer, I agree the modernity of the design isn't intended to match, but does have some representative. I think maybe if you divided the panes a little bit, it might help to give more reference to the historic building, but that would be my only comment on design.
Pam Miller, no comment at this time.
Okay, let's go through it again. Pat, any further comments?
Pat Richardson, no further comment.
Brian?
Brian was no comment.
Katrina?
No further comment. Katrina Horner.
Kathy?
Kathy Levine, no comment.
Scott?
No further comment. Scott Krautzer.
Pam?
Pam Miller, no comment.
Okay. I would like to, at this point, call for a motion.
Katrina Horner. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of J. Elder Studio 25-002210-COA 615 West 40th Lane, as submitted, because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
Do you need to add the condition, of the window?
Would you like to offer that as an amendment to the motion?
Yeah, an amendment to the motion. Number one, staff's suggestion of the condition of options to be added with more windows to elevation, which they're already.
Katrina Harding, I accept the amendment. Thank you.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Scott Krotzer, I second with the addition of the condition.
Okay, great. Let's start with Pat.
Pat Richardson, deny.
Brian Woods, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Chuck Dontrica, approve. Motion carries. Thank you. Next one, we've got the petition of Galen Mortgage Lending, LLC, 25-002225, COA, 1019 West 35th Street, after the fact, new construction, small parts 1 and 2. And special exception request.
Afternoon. So this is Kelly Mitchell again. So again, the applicant is requesting after the fact approval for new construction, small parts 1 and 2, and for 4 special exception requests, the property located at 1019 West 35th Street. So this story has some background to it. The project was previously permitted by the City of Savannah on August 14th, 2024 without a COA. They then approved a revised set of drawings on October 15th, also of 2024. Staff had a pre-meeting with the applicant on August 21st after the permit was issued, but no COA application was received after this meeting. Staff was also unaware at this time that a permit had been issued. Staff was notified by the contractor when the project was completed, which initiated conversations with the city since the project had been fully permitted without HPC's review and without the COA. So with that, it was determined that after the fact, COA was necessary, and that's how we ended up here. So with that, the overall structure does fit well within the immediate context, which includes 1- and 2-story residential buildings. The photo that you see on your screen is the home with the four of the buildings on the block. Two are contributing, two are non-contributing. Immediately across the street are 2-story non-contributing apartment complexes. Staff did include some more context photos in the staff report for y'all to review. Overall, staff found that the project met majority of the standards with the exception of 4, which is why 4 special exception criteria are being, special exception requests are being asked for. So the first 2 deal with this front porch. As constructed, the front porch is 5 feet deep. It should be 6 feet per the standards. Also, the standards require that there be exposed, not exposed, but the front porch should have express piers. Again, this was not constructed that way. The first 4 express height should be a minimum of 11 feet. As constructed, it's only 9 feet. And the final one has to deal with the window transparency on the side elevations. Again, this should be 30%. And as you can see, it's nowhere near the 30% that standards require. So when staff was examining the project against special exception criteria, staff found that the requests were not detrimental to the public interest, health, safety, welfare, function, and appearance of the adjacent uses or general vicinity. Staff found that the structure as constructed meets the comp plan, particularly with Chapter 6, as it allows for more housing that Savannah desperately needs. Staff also found that the proposed work or the constructed work was visually compatible. Within the immediate context, there are a variety of porch types that would not necessarily meet the current standards. So they're not 6 feet deep. They don't have the express piers. Also, a lot of the surrounding context has this lower express height. You know, a lot of them don't meet, again, 11 feet. And also, a lot of the homes, you know, have this kind of an odd variety of opening patterns, especially on side elevations. There are a number that would not meet the 30% transparency if proposed today. So staff finds as constructed, the work is visually compatible and meets the criteria for special exceptions. There were type two other small details that need to be flushed out, mainly the height of the front porch railing and just confirm the pitch of the front porch roof. So with that, staff recommends approval of the after the fact request with the two conditions as you see on the screen, as well as approve the four special exceptions request that staff found that the criteria were met. So this is a lot happening with this one. So if you all have any questions, feel free to reach out. I'm sure to ask.
I have a question regarding the timelines here. So did the contractor do something deceitful here?
I am not sure. As again, the permit was issued in August, on August 14th. They came to staff on the 21st. So I don't know how that happened.
Well, because normally I've gotten permits myself and they will not issue you a permit unless you have the COA.
So I don't know. Again, it appears to have been issued on that 14th of August. Yeah.
And how many inspections did they have before this? When did this issue come up at COA time when it was time to get the certificate of occupancy?
So we were notified, I believe, in March. So I don't know, again, what initiated the contractor to call us, whether or not it's a CO issue, if there's something else. Yeah, but he did reach out to us and say, hey, it's done, and he needs a COA.
Between August and March, we had no complaints. We had no enforcement actions. We had nothing.
Yes.
They had a permit. They called for inspections and got it done the way they were supposed to, and they probably, to their best knowledge, think they were doing everything in compliance.
Yes, sir. And all the inspections have since been passed for this. We are holding up the CO until this is addressed here. Everything else is in compliance, as far as I understand.
So we don't believe that the petitioner did anything wrong. They just, somebody at the city issued a permit they should have not issued.
Yeah, I have no evidence to the contrary. So I believe he was just doing what he got approved for.
Okay. Just wanted to be clear on that. Are there any other questions of commissioners?
This is just more about procedurally. Is somebody following up on that to find out what happens if this doesn't happen again? I mean, obviously there's a huge flaw.
Yeah, we definitely talked to the city again. I don't know what happened in this case. It really is so good, but we'll...
Just as an aside, maybe next month, can we get an update on that as to what happened?
Please? Yes, ma'am.
A little more detail. Thank you.
Scott Krautzer, I have another question. Instead of the special exemptions, even though the client may not have done this intentionally, does the staff feel this might set precedent for other people to do the same thing, or we have a fail-safe that we're now making sure? Because instead of special exemptions, can't some of these things be changed?
In theory, they could. You know, in theory, they could pull out the porch a foot. But to do something like increase the first floor height, you have to rip the entire roof off. So that's clearly a bigger ask, you know. But again, staff felt it was compatible with the district because it matched, you know, kind of what you see in that area.
Pat Richardson, well, how do we keep them from building and ask for forgiveness later? Because that seems to be a pattern now. We're going to build it and whatever happens, happen. You know, forgiveness later.
I think this is completely different though, because it appears to me they did the right thing. They got a permit and they built what is their permit shows. So it's not like they went free range without a permit and then typically come to us and ask for an after the fact, you know, approval. These people actually got a permit, built what was on the permit.
From the city.
Yeah. So yeah. I think this is completely, and I agree with you because we do get a lot of out after the facts, but this is a different animal than we've seen.
Yeah.
Well, I understand that this, it looks like the petitioner holds no fault in this, except I do have a question. These standards that we build to, I'm not an architect, I'm not a developer. Aren't these standards there for them to know when they go to develop something in an area? I mean, aren't they, this is nothing new, correct?
These particular standards, like ours, are not building code. So, again, I don't know if this applicant has worked in one of our districts before, so they may not be aware that these standards exist. Okay, but if they
for the petition,
but the permit was issued August 14th, and you met with them August 21st.
Yes.
So they knew what was required August 21st. And they just chose to.
Not if they had a permit.
No, they met together and they said, this is what is required. And then, so what happened after that meeting? They just ignored the meeting.
Pat Richardson, regardless of already having the permit, they still met
and were told you can't do this, you can't do
that. Somebody told them they had
that. Is that the case? What exactly transpired on that meeting on the 21st? What were they told?
Yeah, I believe.
Who was at that meeting?
So that was a meeting with me, so I was present there. And we overall at the time it looked to be okay. Again, we didn't go through the entire thing with a fine-tooth comb, but at the time we thought it was compatible. Again, if he had applied the COA as required, we would have caught this, all this other stuff. But, you know.
So you didn't necessarily tell them they can't build this. You were not aware they did not have the building permit.
Yeah.
So basically, you were under one understanding, they were under another, and this just sort of slipped through the cracks.
Yeah, there's some miscommunication because we were not told that the permit was already issued. If we had been told that, we would have.
Right.
Flown the red flag.
But so basically, they talked to you in concept of what we're doing. You said in concept, this looks good. We're expecting full well for them to apply for the COA.
And it never came in.
It never came because they already had their building permit.
But wait a second. If they came to you with these plans on the 21st, you would have said the first floor has to be 11 feet. The 30% transparency. The porch needs to be 6 foot deep. You said all this to them. Them. I don't know if.
Yeah, at the time, I can't remember if all the details were given to us. So, you know, if he didn't give us floor plans, we might not have caught the 6 foot. I think my main concern at the time was with the windows, is at the time they were proposing vinyl. So I did catch some stuff, but if he didn't have all the details available at the time, I may not have caught all the details.
But he had to if he had a permit in place. You can't just get a permit.
But yeah, at the time, we were not aware.
There.
Yeah.
Apparently, that's exactly what transpired.
But
they got a permit.
To have architectural drawings for a permit.
I've had permits held up for weeks waiting for to get the COA from the MPC over to the permitting office. So I'm as dumbfounded as you are how this occurred.
What does legal say about this?
So from my understanding, I did contact the city trying to figure out what was happening. And as far as I know, this legal said that the COA was needed, but didn't justify it to confirm.
I mean, I'm by no means saying that we should tear this down, you know, but I think that if there isn't some sort of repercussions for the right thing not happening, it actually disproves our whole system.
Well, yeah, but you're going to punish the victim here. These people thought they were doing the right thing.
They knew they weren't because they had the meeting on the 21st.
Yeah, but they had a meeting on the 21st, Kathy, and they basically said, hey, you know, what do you need to do? They had a general conversation. They already had their building permit, so they assumed everything was fine. And then, not only that, they went from August until March with no one coming out at any point saying there was a problem. Open and notorious construction of a structure for 5 months and no problems. And then at the end, when they go to get their, you know, certificate of occupancy, oh, wait a minute.
Right, that wasn't it.
I don't think we need to victimize the petitioner.
No. Katrina Horn, can I just also add, this seems like someone that has built before. This is not, you know, your Joe. Yeah, it's not a mom and pop. This is someone.
I think the applicant is here and we would
love to hear.
Answer a lot of your questions. Yes. But just to add to what Kelly was saying, we often get people who come in and talk to us about projects. And then for whatever reason, you know, they get divorced, they move, they change jobs, they don't have the money. The projects, we never hear from them again. So it's not unusual for us to have a pre-meeting with someone about a project, and then we never hear about it. So in this case, Kelly met with them, you know, raised some questions, wouldn't have gone through every, you know, specific thing, but would have said, you're in the Kyler Brownville Historic District. There's an overlay. You need to look at the ordinance and go through each of the things. And when you submit it, we will then analyze it based on the overlay. In terms of our analysis here, everyone admits this is not an ideal situation. The fact of the matter is they got permits from the city. They built a house. It's finished. What do you do about that? It's obviously your decision. Staff's view was, as Kelly articulated, overall generally compatible. We're trying to, you know, find a reasonable compromise here. But we'll let the applicant respond to, you know, your comments.
Okay, well, is the applicant here?
Your microphone is turned off. Just a second.
My name is David Guggenheim from Galen Mortgage. All I can say is I contracted with contractors to build this. We never knew about the COA needing to be approved until the final inspection from the city after all the everything had been approved. Someone, when we went in there to pick up our certificate of occupancy, they went, "Ooh, this should have gone before the historic review board." That was when the first time I heard it. And if you want to penalize me for it, you're going to have to justify. I did not do something dishonest here.
This is Scott Krotzer. I don't see it as a penalty, sir. I think there just should be some concessions made, because you would have had to design this house in a certain way to begin with. And I have a hard time. Are you a new builder in Savannah?
Beg your pardon?
Are you a new builder in Savannah?
I've built stuff in Savannah. I've lived here for 30 years. I understand the historic district. I've built in the historic district before. I mean, the city issued us a permit. They came out.
This is Pamela. I don't think anybody's trying to accuse you specifically of doing anything nefarious. No, we're questioning how this could happen when there are design standards. You've built in the area before. How does that happen? We understand that you got permits and all of that. That obviously you felt you had to go ahead to do certain things. But how is it that when you designed the structure, you didn't know about the standards that were already in place? That's I think our confusion and our question here.
Good afternoon. I'm Alfonso Irving, and this is Mr. Kareem Simmons. I work for him. And on this particular project, I was working capacity of the construction manager. Yeah, my name is Alfonso Irving, and this is Kareem Simmons, American Equity Investments, that contracted this particular job for Mr. Guggenheim. We already had the permit. Like I said, on the 14th, we would issue the permit. And then I was told that we were in the Kyler Brownsville area. And then per Mr. Guggenheim, he was like, "Well, go set the meeting up to talk to the MPC. So I took the plans down and I met with her and we had a brief discussion. Mind you, this is my first time dealing with this. So she told me about the Anderson windows and the siding, the hardboard siding. But we already had the permits. So at that point, I'm thinking that was the totality of everything that was supposed to occur during this whole process. That's why at the end, when it was time to get the CO, I called the MPC to let them know we finished the house. Unbeknownst to them, they was like, "Well, how did you finish the house?" I'm like, "I thought that was the process." So now, that's when I actually thought you should apply, because the house is finished. Y'all come out and check it out with the city. And then that's where the red flag came in. It was never malicious intent, because I already had the building permit before I even talked to her. But I'm thinking the whole time we are doing the right thing building, and then you call, the MPC, because the city went, so it was lack of communication, basically.
Scott Krotzer, one question. How did you know that you needed to meet with them?
I have a friend, Robert Price, and he built houses for the city, and he told me that particular house was in Kyler Brownsville, and that's when a week later, after the fact, I went and met with I don't remember if it was her or not, whomever I met with that day on the 21st.
Why did your friend say that you needed to meet with them?
Because we were building in the Kyler Brownsville area. He built in that area. Other than that, I never would have came down there because we was already permitted.
Hello, I'm Kareem Simmons. Like, I can comment on what happens, right? So usually, every time you apply for a permit with the city of Savannah, like 99 out of 100 times, you put in an address on there, and if it needs a COA, it'll tell you every time. This particular time, it didn't say that. So that's the one time it's ever happened. So that means anytime there's a job done in any of these restricted areas, it'll tell you from the start and it'll stop it right then and there and got to get a COA. This is the first time it ever happened where they didn't inform us of it being a problem. Because also with the city, they had a staffing change. We had a bunch of new people in there and so forth. So I'm assuming at that point, that's where it slipped through the cracks and so forth. But it wasn't anything malicious. Every time you put an address in, they'll tell you, you're in this area, stop what you're doing. I mean, wait, and then we have to turn everything into them. And that's it. But this time that just didn't happen. That's the only thing that happened from the start. Because it took like 2 months for it even to get, you know, the regular permit process.
But you work here and you understand this is a restricted district.
No, I didn't understand that. No. When I put the address in, I didn't understand that. Because when you, like I said again, when you put it in there, I'm from South Carolina, but so when you put it in there, any place
into the system in the city, is that where you're put when you say you put it in there?
Yeah, you put it in the E-Trap and you turn it into the city, and if it's a problem, they'll stop you right there and tell you. But I wouldn't know that it was, I wouldn't know that.
And again, at the end of the project, it was me who called. You know what I'm saying? The city probably would have never known if I hadn't made them aware. Because like I say, it was no malicious intent. I thought that was just the natural process of how you go about it.
Scott Crosser, I think the commission understands probably it wasn't malicious. What the problem is now is with such a break in the system, there needs to be some sort of middle ground because there are some design elements that might be easier than just saying, okay, we'll take all of the understanding, even though the client has worked here before in the past, and not make them do the windows. Then if the neighbor comes in, you understand the precedence that's set because of this is what I think the commission is most.
I don't really think there's a precedent here because this was a mistake. You know, this was patently a mistake that goes at the foot of the city. I think we're going to remedy now to make sure this never happens again. You know, I'm familiar with the system, and normally when you put it in for permitting, they'll tell you immediately you need a HR, you know, a historic review board approval. You need a historic preservation commission approval. I don't even know what to say here. And easily, had I been in this situation and I got my building permit issued, I would have started building. You know, just remember a few short years ago, there was no, you know, historic preservation commission. So there again, this building is pretty much built to within standards. The staff says they can live with it. I think we just kind of need to just get through this one and realize that this is a mistake. I don't think we can penalize the petitioner for something that I don't see any evidence they did anything wrong. Okay, at this point, let's close this for public discussion and go into board meetings.
Yeah.
There's no public. Is there somebody to speak from the public?
I just, if you don't mind me adding just a couple of things. So when we looked at this, again, there were the four special exceptions, I believe. As Kelly noted, the porch is required to be 6 feet in depth. It's 5 feet. But we looked at other porches and there's quite a variety in terms of the depths. So we thought that that was reasonable. Also, how do you change that? I guess you could pull the porch out. You can't really have that wall, the main wall of the house be changed. Secondly, the express piers, there's some porches with them, there's some without. You know, do you want to add them? I mean, that's a relatively minor change. This has come up before in Kyler Branville and other historic districts where, you know, that 11-foot expression, I think there was one on Siler that you all may recall where we noted that all the houses were actually much lower, and it didn't really make sense to make somebody have an 11-foot first floor if you're on a street with bungalows. So our analysis was also that the height that they had built it at was actually in keeping with the established pattern. Many of the houses are not that tall. You know, the side elevation, that 30% rule, which I think I can be candid that nobody really loves it, and that may be something that may be changed in the future. But again, you know, you have the authority to obviously make any kind of decision you want in terms of changes. This is a very unusual situation. We have met with the applicants before. I mean, I can say unequivocally that this was not done maliciously or with some any bad intent. They, you know, there was obviously a major flaw when the city issued them a permit, when they should not have been issued a permit. So we understand this is not an ideal situation, but when we went out to the house, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we were surprised that there was a full house that had been built, but we were also then pretty pleasantly surprised that it was overall pretty visually compatible once we went through all the standards, with, you know, some minor things that, as Kelly pointed out, you know, the depth of the porch is in keeping with the neighborhood. The height of the first floor is in keeping with the neighborhood. Not having the express piers, some of the porches in the neighborhood have them, some don't. It's really not consistent. The 30%, you know, transparency rule, that's, you know, we obviously don't go into people's homes. When I was there, we didn't go into these people's homes. But, you know, asking people to change once they finished a house, the windows, and where the windows are, depending on the floor plan, that can sometimes be not that big an imposition, but it can also be a severe imposition, as you all know. So we understand this is a very complicated situation. We're just trying to come to a reasonable.
Thank you. We have no public comment cards, so we will go into executive session here. Let's go ahead and start with Pat.
Pat Richardson, no comment.
Brian Woods, no comment.
Katrina Hornung, I understand this was not done maliciously, but I think there are a few things that could be done to be in the middle as a compromise, one of which being the express piers that I think could be a fairly simple add. And then looking at the floor plan, it looks like there could be some possibility to add windows in the front and back bedrooms on either side of the home in order to help get closer to that 30% fenestration, which I would like to see.
I'm going to comment on this one. I think this particular case, we just need to go ahead and go with staff, pass this and get this chapter behind us, because I don't think it's fair to do something punitive to someone that thought they were doing the right thing. And I look at this house. This house looks really nice. The comments that we've gotten from staff are relatively minor. And even listening to Jonathan, you know, if you go up and down the street, some have express piers, some don't have express piers. This is done. I just think anything we ask the petitioner to go back and do is not going to be fair. Kathy?
Kathy Levina, I agree with Katrina. I think that express piers are a very simple add. It will add greatly to the appearance of the house. Especially under that main column, which is hanging off the porch, which is very awkward, a very awkward detail, certainly not architecturally appropriate. Adding the windows is not a difficult, item to execute. And I would go one step beyond this and get rid of the suburban mailboxes. Put those on the door.
Scott?
Scott Krotzer, I agree with Commissioners Kathy and Katrina. I think that the fenestration should be addressed. The piers should be addressed. Materiality, it looks great. It fits in with the context. I understand there's variances in that. I am by no means saying the entire structure should be torn down, but some of these easy things where we can have middle ground, I think, would be appropriate.
Yeah. This is Pam Miller. I think at this point, there was nothing here that says that this applicant did anything nefarious that I can hear. Maybe a good compromise with the express piers would be in order. That's a simple fix. Thank you.
Okay, let's do one more round. Pat?
Pat Richardson, I agree with Pam. If it's going to help get this project through, I mean, it's a nice looking home. It's just unfortunate that, you know, the city didn't do their due diligence and it fell back on us. So I agree with Kathy.
Brian.
Brian was up. I agree with the recommendations of the board.
Katrina.
No further comment. Katrina Hornung.
Kathy.
No further comment.
Scott.
No further comment.
Pam Miller, no further comment.
Can I get a motion from board?
Kathy Levina. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Galen Mortgage Lending LLC after the fact new construction small part 1 and 2 25-002225-COA with the following conditions. 1 and 2. 3, add the express piers. 4, add windows to comply with the 30% transparency requirement and approve the special exemption requests that read, I can't look at, I'm sorry, to allow for the front porch to be less than 6 feet deep in the single family detached, single family dwelling, two family attached, three. Do I need to do this? The exterior expansion of the height of the first story shall not be 11 feet and the height of the upper story shall not be less than 9 feet. What am I missing? I'm sorry. Let me amend that. To allow for the front porch to be less than 6 feet deep and to allow for the exterior expression of the first floor to be 9 feet deep because the project meets the special exemption criterion is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards.
Kathy, I'd like to offer an amendment where we remove the side window requirement. That's kind of expensive and egregious, and I think that's punitive. The express piers, okay, that's something they can do. But, you know, that's not just simple. I mean, you've done construction.
I have done construction.
That is not cheap.
It's a one-story.
And it's money. Who's going to pay for it? I mean, the city's responsible for this mess.
They can take it up with the city. They can sue the city if that's what they want. But how about one window, the addition of one window maybe rather than two?
Do we want to ask the petitioner?
I will.
Okay.
The question is, would you be in agreement to add at least one window on the east and west facades?
I just want to get to the end of this. If that's what I got to do, I'll do it. Doing four windows is punitive.
Okay.
I've got electrical in those walls. I've got all sorts of other stuff in there. On one side, I've got all the electrical service. So that one's going to have to be at the back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to figure out what's going on in the front. I also have a contract on this that has been held up for 2 months to sell it. So my question would be, if I agree to this, am I able to, you know, do I have to come back in another 30 days and lose this contract again?
No, it would be through the staff approval.
And the piers on the front, I don't have a problem with that, but they're obviously going to be very false.
Yeah. I mean, but you don't have to do 4-inch piers. You know, you can do a half brick.
No, I understand that. I understand that. I'm looking at the house next door. Doesn't have that at all on their porch. You know. No, I don't have a problem with doing the piers. The windows are a big ask because there is going to be some. I cut in
one,
there and
one window up in the main room. That wouldn't be as hard as the back room.
No, the back room on the front.
Electrical meter
on the front unit, because remember this is a duplex. The whole electrical service is mounted on that wall. And I think the plumbing comes in from there as well. So the front left-hand window as you're facing, if you look at the pictures there, I think you've got a side view. Opening up that wall is going to be there we go.
This right here, this front view?
Yeah, but this one here.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how to operate your thing.
Your electrical.
I've got electrical service in there.
Yeah, I see the electrical.
That's probably in the middle of the room there. But I could put one in the back room there. I could put one in the front, or if you want two in the back. Two in the back is probably the easiest. I know I'm not sure you see the other one in the back because it'll be behind the fence. You'll see the top of it.
Okay. All right. All right. Let's do that.
Thank you.
Let's do that. Then one in the back. Okay.
Yeah. One on each back bedroom.
All right.
Kathy, you want to start over again?
Try it again. Can you put back the conditions? Thank you. Kathy Levina. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Galen Mortgage Lending, LLC, 25-002225-COA, 1019 West 35th Street, with the following conditions. 1, 2, 3, add the express piers. 4, add one rear window on each facade, west and east, and approve the special exemption requests that read to allow for the front porch to be less than 6 feet deep, to allow for an exterior expression of the first floor to be 9 feet because the project meets the special exemption criteria and is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards.
Katrina Horning, I second.
Okay, having a motion properly seconded, let's go to a vote. We'll start with Pat.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Scott Kratzer, approve.
Ann Miller, approve.
Jeff Notarico, approve. Motion carries. Thank you. Now let's go on to the application of Array Design, Shauna, 25-002197, COA, 214 41st Street.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Caitlin again. The applicant's requesting approval to construct an accessory dwelling unit at the rear of the property located at 114 West 41st Street. So just for some context, the main building is a contributing resource built in 1921. It's a one-story bungalow on a street with several other similar styles of buildings. Here's a better look. Maybe I went too far with that. All right. So we'll just kind of go through the project quickly here. So this is kind of some views from the lane. These are smaller. I actually also went and took some photos while reviewing just to show how it's a narrow lane with very limited like vantage points. But here is our plans. Get down here a little bit. So we have our drawing, our context drawing showing this is the historic house here. This is the proposed structure, site plan. And then our the existing and proposed site plans here. Floor plan. So this one-story ADU will not have a garage level to it. There's currently a parking space behind a gate. It is going to be relocated to the side where the gate will be relocated, and the car is still parking within there. And elevations. So just quickly, for Secretary, the interior standards, the construction of the ADU will not impact the historic principal building as it is not attached to the house. The height, width, and scale of the building are visually compatible. There's only one historic building on the stretch of West 40th Lane, which is the New Salem Community Fellowship Church at the corner of the lane and Barnard Street. There are also a few non-contributing accessory buildings on the lane, which although they do not count towards visual compatibility, it is still worth noting that the proposed ADU is still within the height, width, and scale of these as well. With regard to the historic principal structures that face the streets but can somewhat be seen from the lane, the ADU is also in compliance. For openings, the standard is met, but a majority of the ground level will be obscured by an 8-foot tall fence, including the rear lane elevation, because there is not a garage associated with the building. There is, however, an enclosed parking space behind a sliding gate. This already exists, but will be moved to the side of the property. And some of these elevations, you can see where the fence level is in relation to where the building is. So a lot of this will not be visible. For the window configuration, the standard is meant for all visible windows. There is a small square accent window on the second story of the east elevation. There is a large square window on the south elevation, but staff notes this will not be visible from the public right-of-way and is not subject to this requirement. For windows being single-hung, double-hung, triple-hung on encasement, except for accent windows, which may also be fixed or hopper, there is one casement window and three fixed windows. The large window on the west elevation is fixed, and the accent window on the east elevation is fixed. The casement and accent windows will be visible or look like they will be visible, but the two fixed windows on the south and west elevations will not be. Staff recommends, and this was just in conversation with the applicant too after working on this review, is that the intent is that this is not going to be visible, but staff just wanted to put the condition on. If this does end up being visible, it's going to have to be an operable window so that the applicant consider adding an operable element, which they were amenable to doing. And then with the 30%, since these will all be concealed behind the fence, there will not be any issues with that. And for the architectural style, as noted with the other projects, the design of the new buildings is not intended to make copies of historic buildings, but rather to create compatible designs. This ADU is not a smaller version of the existing bungalow style house, but the design is still respectful to the historic resource. They share a similar roof profile, as can be seen in the context drawing. I'll bring that back up. Oh, maybe. Here. So with that, staff recommends approval of the request for the construction of an accessory dwelling unit at the rear of the property located at 114 West 41st Street with the following conditions to be reviewed by staff prior to starting the project because the project is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. If the large fixed window on the west elevation ends up being visible, that the applicant considers incorporating an operable element such as an awning window and to provide information about the Munson profiles. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay, can we hear from the petitioner, please?
Good afternoon, Shauna Casera. I am the architect on this project, and I am just going to address the condition that Caitlin mentioned and the large window that faces west. If you'll look here at the proposed site plan, here we are in the very narrow lane with the tall brick wall of the church that's opposite this site. And the window that we're talking about is here where my cursor is. So it's not over here. There are no windows here on this west elevation up here, but that large window is actually down here around the corner. I don't feel that it's going to be visible from any right of way, but if we do need to comply with the standards and make a portion of that window operable, I'm willing to do that.
Any questions from board members?
I've got just a quick question. What's the height of the original house?
Let me see. It was somewhere around just over 20 feet.
And what's the height of the accessory?
And I believe it's 19.6, and I may be off a couple inches there if I can get organized here. We did put together that context. Is that the one, Caitlin?
Yeah, just go to the top.
Okay. There we go.
They look about equal. That's why I'm wondering.
Yeah, we are shorter than and subordinate to the principal structure.
Any other questions? Okay, we have one comment card from Ali Isaacs. Okay, no comments. So we are going to go ahead and close the public input session of this and go into board meetings. Let's start with Pat.
Pat Richardson, no comment.
Brian.
Brian Lewis, no comment.
Katrina.
Katrina Hornung, no comment.
Kathy.
Kathy Levine, no comment.
Scott.
Scott Crotson, no comment.
Pam Miller, no comment.
All right. So at this point, I'd like to call for a motion.
I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Shauna, how do you say your last name?
Cusera.
Cusera. New construction, small parts 1 and 2, and swimming
pool. There's no swimming pool. That was an error.
Okay. I was wondering. I didn't see the swimming pool better. Small parts 1 and 2, with the following conditions. If the large fixed window on the west elevation ends up being visible, that the applicant considers incorporating an operable element. The petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
This is Pam Miller. I second that motion.
Oh. Okay, let's go to a vote then, having the motion tendered and properly seconded. Pat?
Pat Richardson, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Scott Crotzer, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Jeff Notarico, approve. Motion carries. Now let's go to the petition of MBS Construction Services LLC, Charles Smith, petition number 25-002213-COA, 15 West 39th Street, new construction, small parts 1 and 2.
So afternoon, this is Kelly Mitchell. So again, the applicant is requesting approval of new construction, small parts 1 and 2 for a two-story infill and for a two-story accessory dwelling unit. This project does require multiple variances. These include reducing the separation between the ADU and the primary building to 5 feet. The minimum is 10 feet. Reducing the rear setback of the ADU to 3 feet. The minimum in this case is 15 feet. And reducing the minimum building frontage to 58.8%. And minimum is 70%. This project was heard last week at ZBA. The ZBA did choose to continue it to the June meeting. Staff did not include a recommendation request in this case because it was not requested. So with that, staff looked at the immediate block, two blocks around the property. The property in black is the subject parcel. It's a vacant lot. You can see it right here. All the buildings with the exception of one or two stories, the one in blue, which is immediately beside it, is a one-story structure. So staff found that the overall height, the two stories of the primary building could be compatible in this case, given the context in the immediate area. Staff found overall also that the primary building, the accessory dwelling unit, were similar in scale, massing, and height to the context and had similar details, opening patterns, and rear and front porches as the immediate context. There are a couple of things that staff want to discuss as related to the standards themselves. The primary is the window transparency. As you can see on this one elevation, they do not reach the 30% that is required under the ordinance. Staff also had questions about whether or not one of the elevations of the ADU would be visible. This is from DeSoto Avenue. Majority of that first floor would not be visible due to this fence, but it was unclear if any portion would be visible at all. As previously mentioned with another project, the standards conflict with a building requirement, which states that any building that is less than 10 foot from the property line to have a maximum of 25% openings. So in this case, a building code does trump our ordinances. So special exception will not be required in this case, even though it's brought up in the application. Staff would recommend that the applicant try to increase the number of windows to as close as 25% as possible on the main structure. And on that one elevation, the ADU, if it is visible from DeSoto. With regards to the rest of the standards, there are some minor details that the applicant does need to provide. This includes providing material specifications for the lighting in the windows, providing the mun sizes if proposing windows other than 1/1, and redesign portions of the driveway that are visible from the public right-of-way to be a ribbon strip. Other than that, staff found the project to meet the standards. So with that, staff recommends approval of the request for new construction small parts and parts 1 and 2 with the conditions seen on the screen to be reviewed by staff. I believe the applicant is here as well. Commission, have any questions?
Questions of staff?
I just have a question. Do we know why the zoning board continued the application?
They wanted to see what HPC was going to say about the project.
Okay. Any other questions? Petitioner?
Hello, I'm Charles Smith. I'll just say real quickly, this has been a long process. We actually have sympathy for the other gentleman that was here, that went through and got his permit, before the COA, because my dad's been building for a long time. This is my first project downtown with him. But we have not applied, you know, for COA in the past few years downtown. We've had another architect do that. So we went through a different architect this time, and I said I would go apply for everything. You know, we went to go apply for the permit in January, and they actually said almost gave us the permit. We got to the point where they were about to approve everything, and then they found out they didn't approve the zoning right, different things right, so we had to backtrack. So we waited almost 4 months for that, and then thankfully Kelly and them have helped us get to this point. So this is where we are now, and I am happy to answer y'all's questions.
Any questions, board members?
Pat Richardson, thank you for letting us know that, because now we really know we got an issue with what's going on with the city.
There's a lot of miscommunication going on, and I think a lot of people just, like, it even went past the zoning plans reviewer, and it almost got approved, and then John had to stop it with a couple things they missed. And then even with the variance application, we had a couple different variances at first, and then halfway through the application, they had to call me back to change some of them. So it's just, I guess there's so many ordinances, you know, it's hard for everybody to keep up, us included.
Any other questions from board members? Okay, at this point, I'll go ahead and ask for public comment. I've got one card from Ellie Isaacs.
Again, Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC would like to advocate for a continuance on this item due to the visual compatibility concerns with the surrounding area, and the fact that multiple variances and special exceptions that were being requested would likely alter the proposed design that's being presented.
Okay, having no further public comment, we're going to go into executive sessions. So let's start with Pat.
Pat Richardson, no comment.
Brian
Woods, no comment.
Katrina.
Katrina Hornung, I agree with staff recommendations.
Kathy
Ledvina, I would like to see this petition. I'm trying to get to the front facade. I apologize. Can you come back to me? Let me.
Sure. Scott.
Scott Krotzer, I don't want to hold back the petitioner any longer. Obviously, we have some issues, as was stated before, but I agree with HSF.
Pam
Miller. Again, this puts us in a bit of a spot, because we're trying to make sure that we meet the requirements, that you meet the requirements. And it just sounds like there's a lot to be clarified. I'm not certain. Is this something that, again, I'm looking at staff. Is this something you think you can handle through staff? Okay. All right. So you got lucky, you know, because yeah. Okay. If they can do that, then I have no further comment.
Okay. So let's do one more round.
Pat? But Kathy Ledvina, you have to come back to Kathy. So,
okay, Kathy.
So one of the main details that I have a problem with, and I state this all the time, is the awning over the garage. A shingled awning is never appropriate, especially over a carriage house garage. The fenestration pattern on the second floor needs to be reconsidered. It's not visually compatible. There should be at least two windows, solids to voids. Two windows would would create that opening, that rhythm, and then again, that awning should a metal. I think you could do a contemporary metal design that would be better in keeping with the house, and the stair should be reconsidered as to the orientation of the stair. Yep.
Okay, Pat.
Pat Richardson, I agree with staff recommendations.
Brian Wazar, I agree with staff recommendations.
Katrina Hornung, no further comment.
Kathy.
I agree with Historic Savannah Foundation and my comments that this petition needs to be continued.
Scott.
I agree with Historic Savannah. I'm surprised that this is getting kicked back to us rather than zoning making the decision, but it worries me that we continue to approve so many variances when these things are built. This infill is needed. So I do agree with HSF.
This is Pam Miller. I agree with HSF, and I think that they should be continued and come back to us with all of the answers to those questions.
Okay, I'm looking for a motion from someone.
I'll try. Scott Krotzer, I motion to continue application 25-002213-COA. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission continue the petition of Charles Smith until June 25th, MPC meeting, due to all the considerations that need to be made with variances and staff's comments 1 through 5.
Katrina Hornung, I second the motion.
Okay, let's go to a vote, having a motion tendered and second, starting with Pat.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Kathy.
Kathy LeBan, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Okay, motion carries. At this point, should we take a little break? Guys, do you want to? Yeah. Thank you. Let's get back to order. We'll start with the petition of Dean Architecture and Design, Fred Dean, 25-002217-COA, 423 West 42nd Street additions and after the fact alterations.
Good afternoon. This is Kelly again. So again, the applicant is requesting approval to construct a rear addition for rehabilitation alteration work and for after the fact approval of work that was carried out without a COA. While reviewing the proposed project for the addition, staff found that work had taken place without a COA and that it exceeded the scope of the current rehabilitation permit. Work includes altering the roof form of the rear portion of the home, repairing or replacing the existing windows, altering the first floor of the front facade, the front side, and closing a rear door. So staff will talk about the after the fact work and then go into the proposed work. So the applicant altered the first floor of the front facade. As you can see, previously had a door and a window that was likely altered at some point. It's currently now a paired door that's centered. Staff does not find this to be compatible with the MIA context because you do not see a door of this type in configuration on residential buildings. Staff also has concerns because this door is likely not like this historically. While staff does not believe that the previous configuration was necessarily original, what was done definitely was not historic. So staff recommends that something more compatible be placed back. Staff would like the commission to have a weigh in on this to determine what would be compatible. So going back to what we know or going back to some other form of design. Another thing that was altered was the roof form on the rear portion of this building. As you can see in this lower photo, this was a home back in 2022. So it had this kind of slope element to it. Staff did pull the cadastral survey, which was completed in 1936. As you can see, it looked like it had some form of hip roof historically. It's unclear if that was pulled off the main room form or if it was some way, you know, continuation of this. Staff could not find any historic photos to kind of show what this looked like. At some unknown time, this was converted into what you see back in 2022. And then more recently, the shed roof was changed to what you see currently.
Again, staff does not find this to be compatible because there's no evidence that there was one continuous roof form historically. So staff would recommend that it be differentiated from the main massing of the roof forms, so pulling it down, using some form of the roof form, something along those lines. The applicant also removed both chimneys on the home. Staff would recommend that some sort of faux chimney or some similar chimney be placed back. And finally, this rear door was also enclosed at some point. So if the rear addition that's about to come up is approved, that will be hidden, so that's not an issue. But if the commission votes to deny the rear addition, staff recommends that some form of opening be placed back, either a window or a door. You know, window will be more the appropriate in this case. So with regards to what's being proposed, the addition, you know, the applicant is proposing a rear addition on the home. Overall, staff found that it met the standards. You know, it is subordinate to the primary structure. It is inset. The only concern that staff has is if the board denies the roof form and the rear portion of the home, that would impact how this addition ties into the primary structure. So if the board denies this roof form, we'll need additional plans to figure out how this ties into the primary structure. The applicant is also proposing a new driveway off of West 42nd Street. Overall, staff found that to meet our standards, the only thing they need to do is make it a ribbon cut. So whatever portion is visible needs to be that ribbon cut per standards. Staff also recommends that they reach out to traffic engineering. They may have concerns of their own as well. And there are some minor details that need to be clarified, such as what's happened here with that curb element on the front porch. And then it's just some additional negative stuff. So with that, the staff recommends continuance of this request to address the concerns seen on the screen. So with that, does the commission have any questions?
Questions, commissioners? Okay, not hearing any, let's talk to the petitioner.
Good afternoon. My name is James Howley, owner of 423 West 42nd Street. Thank you guys so much for your time, your patience, and hearing my concern and my project. Okay. In purchasing this house, there was a lot of issues with this house. If you go down Martin Luther King, I'm sure you guys see, like, there's a lot of heavy traffic over there in the area. The reason why I did change the window was because since I've owned the house back in December, there has been looters that has broken windows in my property. They're not just broken windows, but I've even had to remove some people out of the house. So there's a lot of heavy traffic of people that just go in there. Then too, like when it came to the roof in the back, the prior person that owned the house was 5 feet. So in the back room that he had, it basically came just above. According to the city ordinance, it states that in the streetcar area, that from the second floor, from the floor to the ceiling, it should be 9 feet. If the ceiling was, like, if we left the ceiling that way, I would not have clearance to go onto the second floor in the back part of that addition part. And what I'm talking about is, what the slope was now. So that is the reason why we did it. Another thing, too, was that I did not know that I had to go before the MPC. I stated with a couple of other people. I went down to the city of Savannah. I got a permit. I told the city what I was going to do. They gave me my permit. The only reason why I knew about the MPC was because this is going to be an Airbnb. Once I went through the process of going through the Airbnb, I was told that I needed to get a MPC COA. After that, but all the work had been done. I promise you this was not intentionally. The only thing I was trying to do is to better the neighborhood. If you go down Martin Luther King, you can definitely see the great work that I am trying to do, just only trying to better that neighborhood. So that's also to 41st Street, one street over, I think is 4 415, 417, that were prior, there are prior chimneys on the houses. Those chimneys has been removed. So what I was doing, what I did was, I took the time within a 500 square feet radius. I took some projects that work was done very similar to mine so that you guys can see this was not something that I just did. I did what I did was file some properties that some changes was made just as well as mine. So it was, like I said, I did meet with the MPC and I do apologize to you guys because you guys were very open, very transparent. However, these changes was made before I was notified by the MPC. I definitely understand that the door does not meet MPC and I get it. However, like these changes are, they're very expensive. I did not go to a bank. This is my hard-earned money that is trying to make this neighborhood better. You know, I have already spent over $500,000 trying to make this neighborhood and this house great. And I just ask that you just have compassion, you know, sympathy in this situation.
Any questions, board members?
Did you say, Pat Richardson, did you say this is going to be an Airbnb?
Yes.
Okay, I have one public comment card from Ellie Isaacs.
Last time, promise. Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation from Historic Savannah Foundation. HSF's ARC agrees with staff's recommendation for a continuance. We have concerns over the visual compatibility in terms of the lack of separation in the roofline between the original building and the early addition, as well as the front facade's masonry, window and door openings, and the proposed design's compatibility for the front porch.
Okay, thank you. Having no other public comment, we'll go to a board discussion. Let's start with Pat.
Pat Richardson, I agree with staff recommendations. There are too many items that need to be addressed.
I also agree with staff recommendation.
Katrina.
Katrina Horning, I'm going to echo staff recommendations.
Kathy.
Kathy Levina, I agree with staff recommendations, and I'd like the applicant to reconsider the height of his proposed rear addition, as well as the setback. I think it needs to be reduced in height and a narrower setback.
Scott?
I agree with staff recommendations.
Pam?
This is Pam Miller. I agree with staff recommendations. Hopefully you can work with them to clarify some of these things before we bring you back again, hopefully in a month.
Okay, at this point, I'd like to call for a nomination for a petition.
Katrina Hornung. Thank you. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission continue the petition of Dean Architecture and Design 25-002217-COA 423 West 42nd Street until the June 25th, 2025 meeting because there are too many issues that we need clarification on.
Scott Crosser, I second.
Having a motion offered and seconded, we'll go to vote. Let's start with Pam.
Pam Miller, approve.
Scott Crotzer, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Horning, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Jeff Ventrico, approve. Motion carries. See you next month.
I want to make a quick comment. I really appreciate your coming here, and I understand the hardship. We always appreciate somebody who wants to go into a neighborhood and fix it up. You have to understand where we're coming from and that these things are happening and coming back to us after the fact is very difficult for us. So we appreciate your willingness to come back next month, talk with staff and see what we can do to help. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on to the petition of J. Elder Studio 25-001663 COA 2513 Montgomery Street, special exception removal. Request.
Thank you. This is Caitlin again. The applicant is requesting approval for a special exception to use fiber cement panels on select areas of the new construction project located at 2613 Montgomery Street. So
you'll see a panel of sample coming around that the applicant has provided. So the special exception request is from the standard that reads exterior walls, new construction, alterations to non-contributing resources and additions that has fiber cement panels under the prohibited materials to allow for the installation of the panels on portions of the buildings. So the applicant came back in with just kind of recapping on the areas that they would like to apply these panels. So it's pretty minimal. It's all in the yellow highlighted areas. And then I don't think, yeah, it's not a huge area. But just as a refresher, at the April 22nd meeting, a design amendment was approved for this project, with the condition to come back for the special exception or to choose a material that was on the approved list. So hence why we are here today for this, for the special exception criteria. So there's two criteria on which we review. One is whether the use for which the special exception is being considered would be located, operated, and maintained in a manner in conformance with the goals, policies, and objectives of the comprehensive plan and the provisions of this ordinance. With regard to the design and the material, the use of fiber cement panels that look like wood panels would be in conformance with the goals of the comprehensive plan and the provisions of the streetcar historic district ordinance, which states the intent of these standards is to ensure appropriate new construction, additions, and alterations within the streetcar historic district. They're not intended to promote copies of the architectural designs of the past, but to encourage contemporary designs that protect and complement existing contributing resources. The amount of paneling is limited to specific areas of the building. It is not intended to cover the entirety of all exterior walls and will serve more as an accent. Though it resembles wood paneling, the fiber cement panels are preferred in this case by the architects, who have stated the reasoning for its use is due to the proven longevity and durability of the material. And in comparison to new growth wood, often plywood, that is used for paneling, that tends to rot more quickly. And then whether the other criterion is whether the special exception would not be detrimental to the public interest, health, safety, welfare, function, and appearance of the adjacent uses or general vicinity. So the staff believes this is not detrimental from a design perspective, which is how we would review this. And then there are no additional conditions recommended for this. And so with that, staff recommends to approve the special exception request to use fiber cement panels on select areas of the new construction project at 2613 Montgomery Street because the project is visually compatible and meets the special exception criteria. Thank you. I'll be happy to answer any questions or turn it over to the applicant.
I have a couple of questions. Sure. Caitlin Scott-Krotzer. Were more areas added? Is that what the yellow is? Because last time they were kind of demarked by the red squiggly.
I think it's just the yellow areas that they're looking at.
So not all the red squigglies then,
no.
Too.
But let me get, they actually have a presentation they'll be showing a little more detail that I can also pull up.
And I noticed in the presentation there's art on those panels. Is that how this is going to be? It's like colorful.
I think that's just the company website has.
Okay.
That's just like their.
So this is a sample, but it's not necessarily finished how
right.
It will be finished.
I think that's just what they were given from the company.
Any other comments from board members? Okay, can we hear from the petitioner, please?
Hello, everyone. I'm Eric Meckley with J. Elder Studio. Got Jerome Elder with me as well. So I'm going to try to keep it pretty quick. We've been with this project many times with lots of little material changes as construction has gone on. So essentially, we have these areas that I've circled or highlighted in red on these elevations where we have this panel. I will note this area that the cursor is hovering over, if you can see that, is not visible by the public right away. nor is this area here. Can I go back here? So when choosing materials for a project, we got a lot of different variables to consider. We're really trying to achieve the look of wood paneling with the added benefits of durability. It's better in our harsh weather conditions, UV degradation, moisture, pests, every way that we can really think of. It's a superior product. It doesn't require a frequent painting like wood, and it is a fire-resistant material. We have wood construction, so that is a concern. And we have other fiber cement projects that are approved on this project that will begin that same dark gray finish. So one of our other concerns is just uniform weathering. So if we used wood and just had a field paint, that would rot and it would fade at a different rate than all the factory finished fiber cement products that we already have on the project. So that's kind of why we're picking to stick with this as a special exception rather than just using wood panels. I'm going to jump back here. No, so the ordinance is written in a way that it equates wood and fiber cement siding as an equivalent type of product, but it separates wood paneling from fiber cement paneling. And I don't want to assume too much, but I assume that it's because most fiber cement products look like something modern and different than an equivalent wood product. And what I wanted to show with these pictures here, we're not proposing to use a product like this. What we are trying to do is replicate these details that we have circled in red here. So I took a couple photos around Savannah where we have similar architectural conditions to what we're trying to clad our building with. So you can see here where we have bump outs in the building, we have wood panels with trim. Here it's a different material, but we have a bank of windows where we have not wood panels and trim, but a similar aesthetic detail where we have trim that accentuates the spandrel area between these two banks of windows. Here's another image on Price Street where this is not wood siding. This is wood panels with trim. And when you look at what we're actually proposing here, I don't know if I can zoom in without screwing this up. There you go. Yeah. I think this is all mostly on the second floor. I think cementitious boards with cementitious trim and a panelized construction like this would be indistinguishable from doing the same thing from wood. Essentially, we're trying to use a cementitious board instead of a piece of plywood. And I mean, I don't want to risk over-explaining this, but looking at the composition of the main building, Building A here, of all the total facade, this material makes up less than 2% of the building. We're not talking about cladding the entire building in this prohibited material. This is truly an accent material that we think is appropriate for its context. On Building B, we're sitting at around 10%, and most of this is due to this portion of the building here where it's not even facing the public right of way. And I think that's all I got.
Okay. Do we have any questions from the board? Okay. Hearing none, we have no public comment card, so we will go into board discussion. Pat?
Pat Richardson, no comment.
Brian Woods, no comment.
Katrina Hornung, no comment.
Similar to before, it's a prohibited material. My question is, this is in addition to what we already approved on this property.
Right. This was, I believe there was an issue where metal paneling had been approved, but it shouldn't have been because it's technically not. So it was just trying to find an alternative. And some places had the fiber cement siding in replacement, but then these smaller areas are the ones.
So this is 10% more than what?
No.
No,
no this would, I mean, yeah. Total. If you guys want to explain it further,
I could probably. Yeah, I'm going to go back to the staff. The squigglies were referred to areas that previously had this product, and we decided to switch to fiber cement siding, which is an approved material. So that's a holdover from our last application. So we can ignore the squigglies. Those are, I was just reusing the elevations from our last presentation.
So,
from what we had discussed outside this meeting before I knew you were bringing this one back, you had talked about the application of the material and how you were going to apply. Could you go into a little bit more detail for the rest of the board?
So I'll jump in here for a second. So the application, as he described, is for it to be used as trimmed similarly to what you see historically. So the panels, so the way that that elevation looked, the larger middle panels, those will actually be at recess. So they're, you have to just think of it as relief. So it's inset. They'll all be painted. You won't see lines the way that you're seeing lines here. They will be all seamed, caulked, the joints, everything else. So it will read like wood. Essentially, it's, unless you went and you chipped away at it, you'll never know. And as he mentioned, one of the biggest reasons is after observing multiple multi-family buildings that went up in the past few years and looking at their current condition, you can see many of them, especially the one just around the corner in Oglethorpe that built a year ago, because it's completed, all the plywood paneling, which is an approved material, has already started warping and pulling away. And just because it's harsh conditions and modern materials for wood are still not up to par to hold up. All the historic buildings that we see, when we see replacements done, they have the same issues. So old buildings with really hard wood, which we don't have anymore, those still stand up. And that's why.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Caitlin, for clarification, is this an approved or not approved material?
The fiber cement panels are technically not approved. Amongst our staff discussions, we believe actually maybe the origin was to prevent something like this, not so much an accent area.
So it really should have been like a percentage issue versus a total prohibition.
That's how we would.
Okay.
You know, it all came about before any of us were here, but you know, I think, yeah, I think as an accent material, it doesn't overwhelm the way that, you know, something like this would.
So are we contemplating doing like a text amendment to fix that?
We have been talking about some ideas on many things, and that is something we could certainly also add to our list.
Yeah, that would certainly be good. Any other questions from board members? Okay, hearing none, we're going to close this, and I'd like to call for a motion.
Katrina Horner. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of J. Elder Studio 25-001663-COA 2613 Montgomery Street, as submitted because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Which is the second.
Okay, we're having a motion proffered and seconded. I would like to go to vote. Let's start with Pat.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Jeff Natrika approved. Motion carries. Okay. Next item, I guess we're going to go to the petition of Sawyer Design, Jonathan Leonard, 25-00217, COA for 421 West 31st Street, new construction, large part two design.
Good afternoon, Jonathan Mellon. As noted during the earlier discussion, this is the part two for the proposed construction. It's a vacant lot, and I'm going to just go through here. It's on the block between Montgomery Street and Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. There's not a lot of historic context there, as I'm sure you've all been out to the site. Here's the site in question. There's a large apartment building that takes up the entire block, all except for this little lot I've always wondered why this lot, maybe the person didn't want to sell. But there's basically all new construction all around there. So there are no contributing buildings for it to relate to. You can see here, we included some sandboard maps that shows how the area, as you all know, the Montgomery Street corridor in particular was really impacted by automobile related uses, and much of the historic fabric was lost. Similarly, MLK lost a lot of its historic fabric as well. You had introductions, as you can see here, of auto repair, a filling station, auto body shop, parking, with most of the historic buildings removed. But again, this is the corner lot in question. It is just currently a vacant lot, so there's nothing there. This was before you in February 26th, 2025, earlier this year. You did approve the request for new construction large part one with four conditions. I'm just going to go through each of these since we have the time. First one was restudy the design of the fenestration of the first floor entrances to strengthen the visual compatibility of the building with the contributing buildings in the area. The applicant has returned with a revised design for the fenestration on the first floor. You may recall, and I'm going to show you in a second, there were these double doors that were really not, you don't really see those on contributing buildings or even new construction. So you all had asked them to take a look at that. And you can see here, this was the previous rendering with these double doors. And you all felt that that was an issue in terms of visual compatibility. So the applicant has come back with a more traditional single door, as you can see below. The second condition was restudy the design to see if the height mask could be broken up through the use of a detailing as opposed to a contrasted material, with a uniform material being used. And going back again, front elevation, this was what you saw the last time. There was going to be two materials, and you all articulated it, and the staff had made the point. You didn't historically see buildings with a brick first floor and then frame second and third floor, unless maybe it had originally been like a, you know, some kind of industrial building that somebody added on to later, but it was kind of a unusual choice. So the applicant has returned uniform brick, which staff feels is appropriate. Again, the context here is a little unusual for the historic district because there's actually nothing for it to relate to. That's right that you can see from this lot. Everything is non-contributing or is vacant. So it's a little bit different. But that was the second item that you asked to be addressed. I'm just going to go through here. The third one was that you asked that they provide additional information on the entrance stoops. That information is included. They would meet the standard with the required depth of 4 feet. And then the fourth and final one was, again, just a request for some additional information on the walls and gates, and in particular, the height. And so what the applicant has returned, they've noted that the height would be 8 feet. So again, I know there were a number of concerns. I'm just going to walk through, kind of give you a quick. So again, at the top is what you saw before, and then the bottom is the revised design, change in materiality, change in the entrances, information on the stoops, the walls. And then I know there have been some concern, I believe, Pat, you'd raise this about how it was treating the facade along MLK, even though, you know, it is, its address is on 31st, that you didn't want it to kind of turn its back and just be like a blank, boring wall along MLK. And so we met with the architect who's here and said, you know, can you go back and look at it? And so you can see on the top, again, there were those contrasting materials. There were not a lot of windows. And we all understand, I think there was an applicant earlier that, you know, MLK is a very busy street. So maybe you don't want to have quite as many windows on a street where people are going 80 miles an hour. But, we and the applicant agreed that to address, you know, Ms. Richardson's concerns and other members, that it really needed to be looked at more holistically and how it turned the corner. And so you can see there's quite a bit more fenestration. I'll let the applicant walk you through that. In terms of our recommendation, sorry, we didn't have this in our, we are recommending approval for new construction, large part two design details for the property located at 421 West 31st Street as requested because the project is visually compatible and meets the standards. And the applicant is here. He's been patiently. And I can let him walk you through this submittal packet if you would like. Pick him up, John. This is another Jonathan.
Thanks, John. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jonathan Leonard with Sawyer Design. I am representing the owners of the 431 project. And again, thank you, Jonathan, for working through the review with us. And we've gone back and addressed a lot of the old concerns that we had, mainly looking at, you know, what should the materials be around the building. And if you notice from a contextual standpoint, we have a rather large building that we're trying to work into and around that is almost completely all brick, and really tried to work with the horizontal lines, window alignments to try to at least work within that building. Across the street, you'll notice that there are no other buildings around that relate to anything that, you know, that we can tie other design elements back into. I think those were really the big overall elements. And then, of course, you know, to address the MLK issue, we went back in on the side and added in as many windows that we felt were appropriate that still fit with the interior floor plan layout without, again, becoming too overwhelming. But I'm here to help answer any questions or guide you in any directions that you may have.
Staff, do we have any questions for the petitioner?
I just have one. I appreciate you coming back, especially since this was on the consent agenda and addressing it for the new commissioners, which I would be one of. It makes a lot of sense, the design details that you have added, and I appreciate all the work that you've done because it looks great.
Thank you.
The only thing that I have questions with is would you be amenable to centering the front door symmetrically for the front, because to me that was the only odd element.
Let's see if we can roll down to the front elevation. The
windows. Vertically aligned. Yeah, sorry, vertically aligned under the windows. Because now that it's not a double door, it seems.
Yeah, right now it what we've done is actually aligned it with the windows to the left side, as opposed to, you know, centered under the double make of windows. And that was mainly to help with the entry process of going around that U-shaped interior stair. So you're not walking into half of that. I mean, I prefer to leave it there on the side with the alignment, but if we have to move it to the center, I'm sure we can accommodate that.
Yeah, for me, it was just a rhythm and symmetry.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions of the petitioner? Okay. Hearing none, we have no public comment cards, so we will go to Jonathan. We'll go to board discussion. Let's start with Pat.
Pat Richardson, no comment.
Brian Woods, no comment.
Trina Hornung, thank you to the petitioner for making those changes. It is nice to kind of see them come back after a few months away. No comment. No further comment.
Kathy Ledvina, I agree the brick is such a better choice. I do agree with Scott that the door should be vertically aligned with the double windows. You may want to widen the door, maybe a 40-inch door, which would be a little bring more prominence to the entry. And the transom detail is definitely a must.
Scott.
Yeah, those are basically my comments because to me, without the double doors, it seems secondary or like forgotten with the small stoop. So I would like to see that aligned with the windows up top or a bigger door.
Pam.
Pam Miller, thank you so much for your hard work and appreciate what you've done. And no further comment.
Okay, so at this point, I'd like to call for a motion from a board member.
If you can turn on your microphone, please.
I think he's amenable to moving it and centering it. Right. It's centering it under the...
Yeah, under the windows. Okay. Scott Krotzer, I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition. Can I have the screen back? I'm so sorry. With the name and the call number.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have it printed out. Okay. For Sawyer Design, Jonathan Leonard, file number 25-002127COA. With the following conditions, centralizing the front door. How do I say that? Vertically align the front door with the windows above. Because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Katrina Horning, I second.
Okay, having a motion proffered and seconded, let's go to a vote. Start with Pat.
Pat Richardson, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Kathleen Levine, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Jeff Netrigo, approve. Motion carries. Now let's go to the petition of Ethos.
Thank you.
Let's go to the petition of Ethos Preservation, Alan Harris, 25002207COA, 534 East 32nd Street. New construction, small parts 1 and 2.
Thank you, Jonathan Mellon again, and we thank the applicant and her assistant who've been very patient sitting here. So we'll try to make this very quick. Let me just run through Ellen Harris. We'll be up here in a minute and can walk you through, but this is for new construction on a vacant lot. I won't go through the floor plans, but basically very traditional design. The exact same design on the same block. And what I will do without boring you all is, since we do have a minute, let me go back here. Go to the staff report. All right. So, again, this is new construction, small parts 1 and 2 for a two-story single-family building and a fence. In terms of all the standards, just give you a little more context. It's a vacant lot in the Thomas Square Streetcar National Register District. Here's the site in question, vacant lot. If you will bear with me, I'm going to, because I think it's important. Been down this block. It's a very unusual block. You have train tracks here at the end, and then you have quite a bit of new construction, including houses that look very similar. But these are all infill. And then interestingly enough, across the street, you have ranch style houses. So suburbia suddenly right across the street in the historic district. It's one of the more unusual blocks in terms of the context. Again, you have this kind of suburban architecture that's been dropped in, and then you have all this new infill construction that is taking place. This may look very familiar. So let me go back here. So again, This is a site that has seen the loss of a number of the historic buildings. The frame buildings were removed along this site. It meets all the site standards in terms of visual compatibility. It's a two-story building. The buildings across the street are non-contributing. It's a very strange context, or a varied context, I should say. Height, width, setbacks, again, materials, foundation brick veneer, fiber cement siding, architectural asphalt shingle for the roof, wood stained fence. In staff's analysis, we do feel in terms of the visual compatibility, roast height and mass would be visually compatible. Again, it's basically a mirror image of other ones that have been approved on this block. In terms of all the materials, meets all the materials. We are recommending approval, but let me go back to the submittal packet so we can take a closer look at it for you all. Here we go. All right, so here's the site in question. This would be the new construction. I know we don't get into the interior layouts, but again, standard design that you've seen around. And I know this is it's an interesting philosophical question that has come up, I think, before Scott and Brian joined the commission. I think a few commissioners had said, are we approving too many of the same designs? It's an interesting point. And I always bring up, you probably have tired of me talking about Washington, D.C., but there was a prolific architect, Waddy Wood, who built or designed hundreds and hundreds of houses. And they're found in every different neighborhood in the capital. They all look exactly the same, and they're loved. And if you look around Savannah, there are certain builders that I'm sure you know just probably better than I do. You drive down one block and you're like, well, wait a minute, those houses look just like those houses that are over on. And then if you do the research, you find out there were builders who built houses all over the Victorian district, the historic district, Collin Brownville. So it's not actually unusual that you would have similar houses on different blocks. So again, the design we felt was very compatible. It meets all the standards. It meets all the zoning standards. There are no variances, spam being asked for this. And again, going back to this context, which I do think is important, here you have a very similar one. It's pretty varied on this block in particular. And we felt that what's being proposed, again, had been approved by this commission numerous times and was we're not just recommending that you approve it because it's been approved before, but we thought if this were, you'd never seen this design before, would this be visually compatible? Yes, it seems to be very visual compatible. So I'm here to answer any questions, or if we want to let the applicant come up, since she's been patient. Answer any questions.
Good afternoon, Ellen Harris with Ethos Preservation. I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Hi, Scott Krotzer. I was just wondering, with the one being so close, if there were some variations that could be made in this one just to make it a little different, because the neighborhood is so different. And while we do have examples of the same builder building, they're just separated a little bit. And I come from suburban Colorado, which is like every house is the same, just a different color. So I'm just wondering if there's just some small architectural details that could help bring the neighborhood, looking like it would have, builders being different and people being different, just a little different. That's the only comment that I had, to see if you were.
Yeah, I mean, we would be happy to like look at maybe doing the different number of panes, for example. There might be other details with the door, perhaps with the porch detailing, the columns and things like that. We would just ask that, with your permission, we bring it to staff for review and approval. But we're happy to incorporate some changes there.
Kathy Levina, the south elevation, would you be amenable to aligning the windows on the second floor with the first floor? It shows in the plan The plan shows that there aren't any walls or anything.
Sure. Absolutely. We'd be happy to do that as well.
Great. Thank you.
I have more of a comment than a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Could you identify your young assistant today?
Oh, sure. This is my daughter, Beatrice Seelander.
I just want to commend you, young lady, because your behavior for the last 2 hours or more has been absolutely marvelous. I don't think my granddaughter would sit still that long. So I thank you very much, and you make a beautiful assistant.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go into board discussion. Let's start with Pat.
Pat Richardson, I like the design. I think it flows in fine with the neighborhood. There are a lot of neighborhoods in Savannah, even some that are not in the historic district, where you have one builder come in and all the houses are alike. I grew up in one.
Brian?
I agree with what she just said, and I also agree with the recommendation for the consideration of the line in the windows, but no further comment.
Katrina Hornung, I would also just like to reiterate Kathy's comment, I believe it was, aligning the front facade windows.
Kathy Labana, no further comment. Work with staff. That'd be great.
Scott Krotzer, no further comment. You can work with staff. Thank you.
Pam Miller, no further comment.
Okay, can I get a motion?
Katrina Hornung, I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Ethos Preservation 25-002207 COA 534 East 32nd Street under the condition that one, the windows on the front facade are aligned, and two, further detailing is made to differentiate between the existing buildings on the block. As submitted, because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
I second Scott Krotzer.
Okay, having a motion proffered and seconded, let's go to a vote. Pat?
Pat Richardson, approved.
Brian was approved.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Kathy Labina, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Okay. Jonathan, we've got the motion carries. Approved staff reviews. We don't have anything. Motions, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Stamp drawings.
That's just a standard thing we.
Okay.
You have to vote on that.
Before we adjourn, I think I'd be remiss in not telling everyone this is going to be Jonathan's last meeting with us. We wish him the best of luck.
Thank you. All of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
I guess we're adjourned.
Thank you.